Longtime editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, now part of WeissWrite.com and a contributing editor to STLBeacon.org. Dick Weiss, good morning this morning.
Good morning, McGraw. How are you?
Where do we find you today?
I am about halfway between Omaha and Des Moines.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Remember when Tom Eagleton said St. Louis was a raucous Des Moines?
Only from the history books.
I can hear the fanfare from here. And I woke up in Lincoln, Nebraska, your old stomping ground.
Yes. Did you visit the rail by chance, or Duffy's right there on O Street?
No, I went to this big movie theater, saw Gran Torino last night.
Uh-huh.
Drove around downtown looking for the McGraw-Millhaven Memorial Plaza.
They've had a hard time raising money for that.
Yeah, I guess so. And, you were quite the pitcher for University of Nebraska, but I guess the steroids didn't work for you, huh?
No, they did not work the way they worked for Alex Rodriguez. So what do you make of, now, not necessarily you're our media critic. You have Katie Couric a year ago with the interview on 60 Minutes saying, asking him, he responded by saying, absolutely not. She says, did you ever think about it? He says, absolutely not. When Major League Baseball players took this steroid test, it was supposed to be anonymous, and the results were supposed to remain anonymous. Sports Illustrated breaks the story over the weekend. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, I guess what impressed me was how quickly the press rushed to judgment on this. I mean, they didn't wait 5 seconds or for a response from Alex Rodriguez to basically say his legacy is destroyed. He's guilty. He did it, and so on. I guess that's because we've been there and done that with so many of these other athletes, and it pretty much turned out that they were, it's pretty persuasive evidence that they did use steroids. But I'm kind of waiting to, to hear what he has to say, give the guy a chance, and let's see if he's got an excuse.
Well, it's one thing when asked by Katie Couric, have you ever taken steroids, and he just says flat out no. Now they're saying he did steroids, and he's saying, or his agent's saying, let me talk to him first. Let me talk to my agent first. So when that's your response, you kind of look guilty.
Yeah, you do look guilty. Whether you are or not is another question. And, it'll be interesting to see which path he takes. I thought the most effective one was Andy Pettit's approach. He basically said, I did it. I was wrong. I am so sorry. And then there was, who was that other Yankee that
Giambi. Jason
Giambi didn't really, he said he was sorry, but he didn't exactly say what he was sorry for. And then you got Barry Bonds, who said, I never did it, or if I did it, I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And so it'll just be interesting to see how he handles it.
I think.
And then, of course, you got the Mark McGwire approach,
right,
who said, let's move on.
I think Major League Baseball can't get out of their own way with this. And I think John Hadley brought this up with Marisak yesterday. And it was actually a pretty interesting point. With football, if you get busted with steroids, it's a 4-game first offense or, whatever the official violation is. That's what it is. It's cut and dry. And the big-time stars in football either don't get caught or are smart enough to know when the test is coming, so they cycle in the non-testing time. Major League Baseball can't get out of their own way on this. This is like waterboarding, because every spring there's another famous person to come out to admit or to or it was leaked to somebody that they did steroids, and so every spring this story is still around. Major League Baseball, they need a new PR guy.
Yeah, unfortunately, football, it's, it might be an offensive tackle or a defensive lineman who gets caught up in this, and that's too bad. They take their suspension, they move on. Fortunately, we're talking here about the game's greatest players who are mounting an assault on the most storied records in the baseball pantheon. And so it's really, it's a different kind of thing. I think it really goes to the heart the integrity of the game the way people feel about their national sport. And that's what's sad. I mean, it just makes you cynical about baseball. I mean, it becomes almost like pro wrestling.
Yeah. Are you driving while talking, or is somebody else driving?
Oh, my wife is doing the driving. It's a little bit of a white knuckle kind of drive. It's pouring rain and a little windy, and she's doing a good job, though.
I was going to say Iowa have a lot of switchbacks and canyons and things like that.
No, actually, here in Iowa, it's a pretty straight drive.
Yeah, it's pretty straight. By the way, when you were traveling through Nebraska, did you see the giant arch over the Interstate 80?
Yes, I did. Was it near Kearney?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Yes, what's that all about?
Believe it or not, the person who built that was trying to make that like the St. Louis Arch. And if they built this arch over the highway, people would get off the road and go visit the arch and spend a night at the hotel and buy some gum and buy some lunch, and it would be an economic boon to the town.
I remember talking to a newspaper reporter about that a couple of years ago, and I think they kind of went into hock on it, and they were kind of hard to pay off the bonds, as I recall. And I imagine even more difficult today.
I would think so.
I haven't checked on that.
Did you obtained a doctoral dissertation from a German student? Tell us about this.
Yeah, it's a woman by the name of Katharina Kolmar, who spent some time in St. Louis. She's out of the Frankfurt University. Actually, it's not a doctoral, it's an MA thesis. She got interested in the Post-Dispatch, and she asked me a few questions, interviewed me. And her topic is between ethical standards and economic pressure. And she looked at what Lee Enterprises has done with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch since it purchased it. A lot of interesting observations, but if you could pull some news out of a thesis, there was an interview that she did with Arnie Robbins. And what Arnie told her was, when asked if the Post-Dispatch could be an online paper one day, Robbins answered that could become a reality during the next 10 years. And then she quotes him as saying, it could be that we say we get rid of the Monday issue or Tuesday or Wednesday. We could print the paper on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, or just on Sunday, and for special editions like with the election. The Sunday print issue would be the big deal, and the rest of the week, the staff could work hard on the website. This would mean the paper would save a huge amount of cost since newspapers spend most of their money on distribution. Now, he does say this could be 10 years away, but it's kind of interesting that the editor of the Post-Dispatch is already speculating that they won't be printing several days of the week.
Which is not any big surprise, except that this is coming from one of the honchos with Lee Enterprises.
One of the honchos. And, you know, of course, this is already happening in Detroit, and I don't think there's any question that it will be happening in cities around the country as people move increasingly to online.
In terms of the economics of it all, and I know you were an editor there for a long time, so you might not be the best person to ask, but is most of the money, most of the cost on printing it, rolling it up, putting it in plastic, and delivering it to my front door by 6 a.m.?
Yeah, a lot of it is. It's the printing and the distribution. And a huge cost there. And, of course, you've got to pay the labor, the people, the reporters and so on. And, unfortunately, the printing and the buying the paper, the commodity, aren't costs that you have very much control over.
Right.
The staff you have control over, you can cut the staff a whole lot more easily than you can cut your costs, unless you go online. Now, the danger is that when you go online, you're not necessarily going to take all the readers with you.
Right.
You're not going to get all the revenue that you had been getting from advertising. And there are a number of thinkers out there who say that if you cut the print out, that is really a death knell for your organization, that you really are not going to be able to take the readers and the advertising with you to any great extent, that you would have to cut your staff even more than they already have. And Arnie, in this interview with the German student, said he really feels like the staff has already been cut to the bone.
Right. So. Well, yeah, no question about that. But again, I think, since I do a lot of my reading online, and I get that, let's stop picking on the Post for a second. Let's take the New York Times. I get the Sunday New York Times delivered to my house, and I pay, I don't know what it is, $30 a month for it. But I can get it for free online.
Exactly.
And Monday, I don't have all the waste of trying to throw out this giant Sunday newspaper. So at some point, it just doesn't make any sense. They're doing one thing and asking their customers to do something else. But more importantly, you go online, you don't see the ads because it doesn't look like a newspaper. You should check out the Sporting News. The Sporting News has a daily feature, if you will, a daily magazine, but it's only online. And it looks like the Sporting News would look like if you pick it up at the newsstand. So the advertisement is right where it would be on page 2, you know, lower right-hand corner. And so when I go online and look at this article, that's where the ad is. It makes much more sense than what these websites are doing now, because it's just, I don't think it's beneficial for the advertiser.
Right. The advertisers are going to have problems with it because many of them look at advertising in sort of a traditional sense. They want to, they think about advertising like it's in print. Unfortunately, younger readers don't have that sense of the newspaper that older readers do, and they are much more attuned to websites that look different than a newspaper would look online.
Right.
And so what newspapers are going to have a problem doing is appealing to traditional readers. At the same time, they're trying to get younger readers who are YouTubing it and Facebooking it and, right, and so on. And they find that the newspaper websites are very stodgy and not as interactive as they want them to be. And they're not going to go there. That's what the problem with the transition to online for newspapers is going to be, is they don't get nearly the number of young readers to their websites that they do with older readers. And older readers are not nearly as internet savvy,
right,
as the younger readers.
You know, I don't necessarily agree with that criticism. Older citizens, senior citizens, older people, whatever. Yeah, they're not going to YouTube and downloading the latest Beyonce videos, right? And they're not going to iTunes, but they are going to websites to check out their stock portfolio, right? They're going out to check out the latest shows in Branson. So they don't know how to download iTunes, but they do know how to check out their stock quotes. So they do know how to navigate, but they know how to navigate to things they're interested in.
Yeah, and they will. They'll learn. I mean,
right,
they all learn how to use a TiVo, right?
Right.
Or at least some of us did.
Right.
Some of us are still working on studying the clock. But,
hey, what's the best story we've never read?
Well, there's an interesting story in the Kansas City Star the other day. You know, we're all supposed to be spending our money to save the economy.
Right.
And yet, you know, as we run into credit card debt and we, you know, our home equity situation is getting difficult, the incentive now is to pay down your debt. If you pay down your debt and you don't put more money in the economy is going to go south, and our stock portfolios are going to go down, and so on. So there's a real contrast or dichotomy in what the heck we're supposed to do as individuals. And the Kansas City Star looked at that, the psychology of, well, if we save our money, we're going to ruin the economy. If we don't save our money, we're going to ruin our own pocketbook.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It's an interesting story.
All right.
And in the Beacon, I wanted to point to a story that Joe Seltzer did, one of our fine freelancers. You know, it's bald eagle season, and what people need to know is that the only reason that Missouri has bald eagles is that several decades ago we traded out our turkeys to other states in exchange for bald eagles. One of the great trades since Brock and Broglio. I want everybody to go read that article. It's very interesting.
So we traded our turkeys, and in return we got eagles?
We had a surplus of turkeys and no bald eagles, zero bald eagles. And now they're all over Clarksville because some savvy wheeler dealer, the Bing Devine of conservation, traded turkeys for eagles.
That is a great story.
We got a great tourism industry in Clarksville because of it.
And that's at that article is at stlbeacon.org.
STLbeacon.org.
Hey, drive safe. Bring you back a magnet for my refrigerator, and we'll talk to you next week here in studio.
Okay, I'll be there.
Dick Weiss, ladies and gentlemen, weissright.com or STLbeacon.org. That's our buddy, media critic, longtime editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm going to check out that story. That's a pretty good story about the bald eagles.